This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, essential Mac time savers.
Mac OS X is absolutely stuffed full of little tips, tricks, shortcuts, better ways of doing things, and we've got five of the best of them in this podcast.
Chris Finn gives you a handful of important shortcuts every Mac owner can use. Also coming up, we go hunting for Easter eggs.
They're a wee bit of the programmer's personality. You know, you get the feeling that there is a real human being behind, you know, this big software program or this operating system.
Gary Marshall shows us some of the hidden treasures you can find lurking inside your Mac. All that and more on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello, everyone. I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks so much for joining us. Compared to the Windows platform, the Mac is incredibly user-friendly, stable, and powerful. Chances are you already knew that, and one of those positives might be the reason you're now using a Macintosh. But what you might not have known is that there are literally hundreds of shortcuts, tips, and tricks that you can use to save time and generally improve your workflow and productivity. In the March issue of Mac Format are 9 pages of shortcuts in the feature entitled 93 Essential Time Savers. Deputy Editor Chris Finn joins us now to highlight his favorite 5 from the 93 and gives us 5 extra time savers of his own. He joins us now from the newsroom of Mac Format Magazine. Chris, welcome back.
Thank you, Brad.
Let's not waste any time and get right into the Fab 5. And the first is having to do with working smarter. Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the smart stuff that you can do. It was introduced in 10.4, it's been extended in 10.5, and by smart things, what we mean is automatically updating lists. So rather than building a static list of something, whether it's a playlist of songs or whether it's an album in iPhoto, and that just stays there, you basically define a set of criteria, and the list automatically updates itself dynamically to match those criteria. Holland Jones, the guy who wrote the feature, done a cracking job on pages 26 and 27 of explaining the whole idea of smart and the ways it can be used. I've got a couple of special tips for you, though, that aren't in Holland's feature. So one of the great things I use smart for is to build smart mailboxes. And I've got a mailbox set up in Mail that I call my overview. And here's what to do. So go to the bottom left of the mailbox mail screen. You'll see a little plus. Hold down the Alt. That'll change to a cog. That means you're creating a smart mailbox. Give it whatever name you want and change it so that it reads like this: contains messages that match any of the following conditions. And then you see messages flagged, messages unread, or date received is in the last 8 days. What that does is it presents you with an overview of all the important messages, all the things that you have to action or deal with in your mail. So it shows you the messages that you've flagged for later follow-up. It shows you messages that are unread that you haven't actually opened yet, and it shows you other messages that have arrived in the last week. It's a cracking way of giving you an overview of the stuff that's in your mail folder.
Okay, now give us that criteria again.
Okay, so message is flagged, message is unread, and date received is in the last 8 days.
Those are our working smarter time savers, and they appear on page 26 and 27. We move on to time saver number 2, and that is speeding up your life with multiple edits in iTunes.
Yep, iTunes is a fantastic application if you've got more than a few hundred tracks in there that can get very confusing. And what Holland said in his feature is that, remember, you can select multiple items at once and edit the information to do with those. So if your ID3 tags aren't complete for certain albums or anything like that, you can select a bunch of different tracks. And remember, you can hold down the Command key, the Apple key, and you can select what's called non-contiguous selection. So it's if you've got tracks that aren't all grouped together already in whichever view you're looking at, hold down Command and click on all different tracks you want to edit, then do Command I, and you can go in and edit things like genre and whether it's a compilation, what status it is. My little extra tip for this is to do with genres. Now, one of the easiest things you can do in iTunes to make your library much more accessible to you is to work with musical genres. Now, the chances are that unless you've been very, very clever and very disciplined with putting your music into your library, the chances are that you will find that the genres you have set up for all your different tracks are very complex and very confusing. The easiest thing to do is to go through and make sure the genres are correct for all your different tracks. Now, the easy way to do that is just to make sure that the browse window is open. You do that by clicking the little I symbol at the bottom right of the iTunes window, and you'll see listed there the different genres you have set up for your music. the easy thing to do is to click on each one of those and go through and check that you agree with those genre listings for each track. If you do that, then what happens at the end of it is you'll come up with a bunch of tracks that have the correct genres associated with them. What you can then do is you can build smart playlists. So if you're a big fan of classical music, if you're a big fan of rock, if you're a big fan of hip-hop, and you've got all these different types of music in your music collection, all you can do is, once you've rated the music, you can create a smart playlist that says, show me only the best classical music, show me only the best hip-hop, and it will automatically gather those tracks together because you've rated them and you've assigned the genre to them properly. So it's a very quick and easy way, once you've got the information there, to actually build a playlist for yourself.
Tip number three has to do with faster printing. And Chris, I don't think a lot of people know that you don't have to open a document in an application to actually print it, right?
Well, they know that now if they've read the feature in Mac format. You're absolutely right. I mean, you can just drag a document straight from the Finder or from pretty much any other view directly into the printer that's in your printer list, whether that's in the appropriate system preference pane in Leopard or in the printer setup utility in earlier versions of OS 10. So you can just drag and drop it straight from your desktop or from a Finder window to that printer. And depending on the type of file it is, it should just print automatically without having to open up the host application, or if it does, it will apply some basic defaults so that it's much quicker for you.
Right.
There's an extra few ways of making this even more powerful, though, that Holland didn't quite have time, have space to talk about in his feature. You can, for example, with 10.4 and with 10.5, you can create desktop printers. Now, if you've been using Macs for a long time, you'll recognise this from the pre-OS 10 days, where you actually had a printer on the desktop, and you can grab a file and drop it straight onto that. So you don't even have to have opened printer setup utility or opened the system preferences thing. You can just drag your document straight from the Finder onto the icon that's always on your desktop or is always in your dock or your toolbar of a Finder window. It's a really quick way of printing stuff out. The way to create desktop printers in 10.5, load up system preferences, click on your printers, you'll see your list of printers there. You can just drag one straight from there, from the list of printers, onto the desktop. The printer appears and then you can just drop the file straight onto it. But you can take it even further. If, like me, you work in an office where there's a bunch of different printers around you, but some of them are always being jammed up, you can create what's called a printer pool. Now, a printer pool creates a virtual printer for you that pulls together, let's say, three printers. What happens, you create that printer pool, you print your document to that pool, and it gets printed to the first available printer. It's a really, really easy way of making sure that your document comes out as soon as it possibly can. The way to do it in 10.5, you load up system preferences, you select the printers you want to include in that pool from the list of printers in the printer system preference pane, and it will show you that you have multiple printers selected and to create a printer pool. Even that one then can then be dragged and dropped on the desktop. Fantastic. So what you've got now is an icon on your desktop representing three printers in your office. You drag a document straight onto that and it prints in the first available printer in your office.
Okay, that's our quick print tip. That's on page 25. Another tip on page 25 is number four, and that has to do with making an archive quickly and easily.
Yep, since 10.2, we've had the ability to create .zip compressed archives of files. There's a bunch of reasons why you'd want to do this. One is for archiving, because it will save space. Another much more relevant one for most people is that it gives you one file. So rather than sort of trying to mail a bunch of, you know, a few JPEGs here, a PDF there, you bundle everything into one, and you've got one file that you can then transfer with a bonus.
Just combine them together, yeah.
Exactly, with a bonus so that it's then a little bit smaller as well. Now, the really nice thing about this is that email was never really designed as a way of transferring files. But if you attach a .zip, it should transfer fine, depending on how your outgoing email service and the recipient's incoming email service is set up. So I know you'll like this from Brad, because it's one you and I use a lot. My recommendation here is to use a service such as MailBigFile or YouSendIt. MailBigFile is at mailbigfile.com, and YouSendIt is at YouSendIt.com. It's Y-O-U, not the letter U. These services allow you to transfer multi-megabyte files over the internet very simply and very easily. Now, if you've tried to ever email a file that's more than, let's say, 5, 6, 10 meg, you'll probably run into problems either from your end or from the recipient's end. What these services allow you to do is upload a file to their servers. They automatically generate a link that is sent to your recipient as an email. All you have to do is click on that and the file automatically downloads. The reason I'm including that with this tip about compression is that what you should do is take all your files, bundle them into one easy to transfer .zip file, and then use something like MailBigFile or YouSendIt just to get everything over the web to your recipient. Now, both of them have free equivalents. With each of them, you can transfer up to 100 megabytes on the free service, but they're excellent ways of getting large numbers of files from one computer to another over the internet.
Yeah, I know that you use one of those services a lot to send me files. So it really is a very powerful and useful tool. And they really aren't that expensive. So that's good too. And finally, tip five has to do with quick downloads with Safari.
Yeah, one of the things that Holland highlights in his feature is the ability to hold down the Alt key, or on some keyboards it might be marked as the Option key, while you click on a link in Safari. And what that will do is it will automatically download the target of that link. So if there's a link on a page that says, download the manual here, ordinarily you might think you'd click on that, and then it would launch either Adobe Reader or if you've got Safari set up to do PDF reading inline, then the PDF would load into Safari and you'd have to read it and then save it out or all that sort of stuff. It gets a bit mucky. If you hold down Alt and click on that link, it will automatically download the PDF straight to your downloads folder if you're in Leopard, or to your desktop if you're in Tiger. So holding down Alt and clicking on various different links will download the target of those links. It's a really easy way of quickly grabbing stuff from the web. And as Holland points out, you hold down Command, click on a link, that will open up in a new tab if you've got tab browsing set up in Safari. There's a bunch of different things you can do there. My extra little tip here is that if you have a URL for a file, let's say someone sends you a link to a manual, to a PDF manual.
Right.
If you click on that link in your email client, it will open up Safari and the PDF will load within Safari. You then have to go and save it out and go through all that process of file save as, or in Leopard, going down to the bottom of the window and hovering over to get the little pop-up icons and downloading it from there.
Right.
But what you can do that's even neater than that is if you just copy that URL, paste it into Safari and hold down Alt while you hit return. Ordinarily you'd obviously hit return to load that URL.
Right, just add Alt.
Exactly. Hold down Alt, hit return, and it will, instead of loading it within the window, it will download it to your desktop. Makes a lot of sense if you just
It'll save it to your desktop. Cool.
Exactly. Save it to your desktop or save it into your downloads folder if you're in Leopard.
Very neat. Very neat. So those are the five, together with Chris's five extras. Now one more thing we should say about the Time Savers feature. On every page of the feature is a smattering of keyboard shortcuts that you might not have known about. Dozens of them, such as checking for new mail by simply typing Command Shift and the letter N, as in Nancy. All right, Chris, thanks for showing us five great time savers and your favorite five.
My pleasure, Brad. Thanks again.
Chris Finn is deputy editor of MacFormat magazine. The feature 93 Essential Time Savers begins on page 22 in the March issue of MacFormat. Oh, Easter, the time when stores are filled with jelly beans, candy eggs, bunnies of all types, and baskets for carrying all the bounty. But as Easter fast approaches, it isn't simply a commercial festival about dyeing and hiding eggs or wearing new spring attire. No, Easter eggs can be nice chocolate goodies, but in the world of high tech, they're little surprises programmers have added inside software, like little games or jokes. Whether or not you know it, if you're a Mac user, you've already got some Easter eggs. So what are Easter eggs, and where can you find them? Well, contributing writer Gary Marshall joins us to talk about some of his favorite Easter eggs in his four-page feature in the March issue entitled Mac OS X Easter Eggs. Thanks for joining us, Gary.
Thanks, Brad. It's good to be on.
There are all kinds of interesting little things lurking in Leopard and other favorite applications. What do you like about Easter eggs?
I think what I like about them is they're a wee bit of the programmer's personality. You know, you get the feeling that there is a real human being behind, you know, this big software program or this operating system.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them are quite cheeky, and it's always nice to have a wee bit of a sense of humor in computing, because computing can be pretty dull otherwise.
Yeah, it really can be. Let's talk about some of them. And the first one you like is what's called speakable items. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is the voice control thing that's in every copy of OS X. So if you go into System Preferences and enable speakable items, then you know your Mac will start listening to you, patiently waiting for command. And if your command is "tell me a joke," then your Mac tells you a knock knock joke, and it's not particularly funny, but I think it's really cool that it's in there.
Yeah, and is it just one joke, or is it many jokes, or what?
As far as I can tell, it's just the one, but maybe I'm just unlucky.
Really? Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll have people try it out and see what happens. Number two on your list is an Easter egg in TextEdit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's a few of these dotted around in Leopard, particularly now we've got the high-resolution icons. And if you go into CoverFlow view and go into your Applications folder and look at the icon for TextEdit, you see there's writing on the letter there. Uh-huh. So if you get that nice and big on your screen, you can see it's the full text of the Here's to the Crazy Ones poem, which is one of the more famous Apple adverts that we've had. So it's, you know, here's the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, the troublemakers, and so on. And this sort of stuff is becoming more common, I think, because the really big Easter eggs have kind of have been knocked on the head a wee bit over the last couple of years, largely because of security concerns. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people are trying to put their personnel in other ways. And, you know, there's another one in CoverFlow View. If you connect to a Windows server, the icon has got a Windows blue screen of death on it. So there's kind of cheeky wee digs and things like that starting to pop up.
Yeah, little digs, especially back when Apple, a number of years ago, was just getting into its relationship with Microsoft and really attacking Microsoft Windows. So basically that little dig of PC users is quite interesting.
And it's the sort of thing that every Mac owner is going to laugh at as well. So it's kind of it's telling an in-joke.
Yeah, it really is. Now, there are lots of Easter eggs in third-party applications like software from Adobe, right?
Oh, definitely. Adobe's got a long tradition of this, and Photoshop in particular always comes out under a code name. And when it actually ships in the final version, you can have a look and see a splash screen for what the code name was. So basically, when you load Photoshop, if you hold down Command and then click Photoshop About Photoshop, you'll get a different splash screen. So with CS3, you get a bright red lozenge and the working title of the red pill. In Photoshop 6, it's Venus and Furs, and Photoshop 8, it's Dark Matter. But that's not the only stuff that goes on in Adobe programs. So, for example, inside Photoshop, there's a wee wizard called Merlin T. Wizard, which is a homage to version 2.5 of Photoshop, which was codenamed Merlin. So if you bring up the layer palette and click on the arrow for the palette menu, hold down Option and select Palette Options, you'll get a wee wizard in a box. And there's also there's a memorial to a dead dog in there.
Really?
Yeah.
A dead dog that belongs to a programmer?
Must have been one of the programmers, yeah.
Really?
If you select the type tool and then click toggle palettes, that'll bring up the character palette. And if you type in the font family field, type the name of an installed font. So, for example, you might type Onyx and then immediately type Francis after that. Don't hit return or anything like that. And you'll get warning beeps as you type the stuff after the font name. But just carry on with that. And if you click on the toggle palettes button again, you get a photograph of Francis the dog and some really sad memorial text. And I think that's really sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows, as you said, the personality of the people behind these applications.
That's it, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, now number four is Space Invaders, the game that a lot of people know from way back in the 70s and 80s. And it's in OpenOffice or NeoOffice, right?
Yeah. It's not quite Space Invaders, I'm sure, because of copyright reasons, but it's very, very similar. Basically, what you need to do, if you launch OpenOffice, create a new spreadsheet and pick any cell at all, and there's a formula, it's an equal sign, then the word game, open bracket, close bracket. And if you press enter, the cell says, say what? So if you now type equals in capital letters, game, open bracket, open quotes, Star Wars, close quotes, close bracket, and you get a wee Space Invaders game. And, you know, to be honest, it's not the best game in the world. It's not going to have anybody, you know, trading in a PlayStation 3 or anything like that.
Right.
But, you know, Office applications are not very interesting, are they? So anything to brighten up your working day, I think, is a good idea.
Yeah. You know, the really interesting thing that I see about Easter eggs, like you were saying, is the personality that they bring, but also kind of still goes back to the early days of programmers who were radical and did things really differently. And now we're all into this commercial thing where everyone's trying to make money. Let's have a little bit of fun, you know?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things with Easter eggs is that programmers were doing it basically to delight other programmers and to delight people that were willing to go looking for this kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's a wee reward for paying a wee bit more attention to the software than just launching it and using it to do a job.
Yeah. Lots of fun Easter eggs. Gary, thanks so much for going over these interesting little Easter eggs that add a little bit of fun to the world of the Mac. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Gary Marshall is a contributing editor to Mac Format. His feature, Mac OS X Easter Eggs, appears on page 68 in the March issue of Mac Format. A basic drawing tool, a default folder add-on, and a quick look plug-in. Those are the three shareware reviews from the upcoming March issue of Mac Format from Craig Grinnell. He joins us now for some reviews. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm very good. Now, before we begin, you might be saying to yourself, hey, Craig was just with us on the last show. Well, you're exactly right, and that's because we didn't review shareware in January because of our special expo show, and that got us a little bit behind schedule. So now this will put us back on track for shareware reviews on every other show, and Craig just happens to be reviewing three products this time around, and the first one is called 8-Bit Scribble, version 1.1 from 8bits.com. You can get to it from our enhanced podcast link. It's about 10 pounds. And Craig, you describe Scribbles in your review as a, quote, deceptively simple drawing tool for the rest of us, unquote. What does it enable you to do?
Well, Scribbles is essentially a straightforward and very honed down sketching application that enables you to create digital drawings. The thing is, even though it's very, very simple on the surface, or at least looks simple because of its very streamlined interface, it's got a really excellent underlying engine which even rivals the likes of Photoshop's.
Now, you just mentioned Photoshop, but unlike the likes of Pixelmator, it's not really trying to be a slimmed-down version of Adobe's application, is it?
No, I mean, Scribbles is very, very focused, and it kind of reminds me of Writeroom, the very, very streamlined text editor come word processor. And then it's not really feature-packed, but it does a specific job very, very well. And this is perhaps where, you know, software might be going. People are getting kind of sick of bloated stuff, and they're looking for very, very specific tools for specific jobs. With Scribbles, the interface is actually unique, and I think that's one of the really good things about it. The guys thought of a new way of approaching sketching, then it hasn't just ripped off Photoshop. You know, it's really great to see someone trying something new. I mean, the interface has no words. It's very, very intuitive. For example, the layers aspect of it, instead of doing the usual abstract 2D palette, the layers are done as a completely 3D interface. It's very intuitive. You drag and drop. Each layer in 3D shows its contents, and it just works very, very well.
Who is this application most suited to? I mean, I've heard that it's going down well in education.
Well, that's definitely the case. There are certainly a lot of teachers using it in the classroom, and I guess it's very good for kids due to the interface being very, very simple, and it's also very easy to upload creations to the Scribbles gallery online, so, you know, it's easy for kids to share their pictures around the world. The thing is, I think it's also really good for professionals as well, and that can't really be understated. It's not fair to sort of lumber this in as something, you know, a really quick application for kids. The thing is, for professionals, there are plenty of export settings, there's great graphics tablet support, and there's also the ability to speed up all of the interface animations, which is great if you don't want to hang around for that sort of thing. And frankly, for the sake of £10, it's worth anyone who enjoys creating digital artwork checking it out.
All right, that's Scribbles. We move on to our second product, and that is St. Clair Software's Default Folder X version 4.0 from stclairsoft.com. It's about £18, and Craig, it enables you to power up, open, and save dialogues. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't sound particularly exciting, but this really is my favorite shareware add-on at the moment. I really can't live without it on any Mac I'm using. The thing is, what you've got to bear in mind is how often you use open and save dialogues, and Default Folder can speed up the process every single time.
So, Craig, real simple question. How does it do this? How do you enable it to do this?
Well, via its preferences, you can define default folders for every application on your computer, which snaps an open and save dialog directly to that folder as soon as you go to open or save a file. You can also define hotkeys for faster access to any folder on your machine, and that's really, really handy. It gives you quick access to recent folder. Again, hotkeys can enable you to get to different ends of that list. And there's abilities to perform actions in the save or open dialogs on files and folders within them. So, for instance, you can rename a file without going back to Finder. One of the great features about Default Folder, which has been in it for some time now, is the ability to access open Finder windows from the dialog. And you can do this via the Finder menu that's within the dialog, or you can click on Finder windows in the background. It also gives you system-wide access to favorites from the menu bar or dock item, which is really, really handy for all those people that are really irritated by Apple removing that functionality from the dock in favor of Stacks. And, you know, 10.5.2 may well bring back this feature, but in the meantime, Default Folder does it better than Finder ever did anyway.
I also understand it's got some new features as well. Tell us about those.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most controversial aspects of Default Folder 4 has been the new interface. It uses an HUD style, and personally, I think it's nice. I think it's more in keeping with Leopard, although it looks like from the developer blogs that they are going to give you an alternate to this in a forthcoming update. But perhaps the most important thing, and this isn't gloss at all, is the new preview and information pane. Now, in Finder, you have a column view, and you can get little previews of things like PDFs and that sort of thing in there. But with Default Folder, you get this massive preview that actually stretches down to all the available space on the screen. It's really, really handy. It enables you to see images much, much better than Finder can. And in this pane, it also gives you the ability to look at a lot of other information, like pretty much everything from, say, the Get Info window in Finder. But you can also define file permissions for a folder and also spotlight comments as well.
All right, so that's St. Clair Software Default Folder X version 4.0. Craig, you gave it 5 out of 5 stars. You say, quote, buy it right now at £18. £18, quite expensive for a shareware add-on, don't you think?
Well, yes, I think it is, and this is a criticism that's been levelled at Default Folder for quite some time now. The thing is, you really do get what you pay for. It's stable, it's got lots of features, and the thing is, unlike some add-ons, it really is genuinely useful on a day-to-day basis. You know, every single time you open or save a file, you can save yourself time. Imagine how much time that can save you, and, you know, how much is your time worth? personally, for me, £18, it's an absolute bargain.
Yeah, it really sounds like to me, Craig, that you're right. It's really worth at least checking out. And also check out the How to Master Default Folder X4.0 review, two-page in-depth on how to master this product, beginning on page 58. The review of the product itself is on page 92. And again, 5 out of 5 stars, a Mac format choice from Craig on St. Clair Software's Default Folder X4.0. Let's move on to our next product on the list, and that is Better Zip Quick Look Generator 1.1. This is a quick look plugin, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Usually with zip files in Finder, you see an icon preview, the date it was modified and the size, and that's it, which isn't particularly useful, frankly. What this application enables you to do is look inside zips without opening them, so you can see the files that are inside the zip and information on them that you'd get in Finder's list view.
And you can also configure it the way you want to see the information.
Yeah, there are various things that you can toggle. For instance, you can decide whether the headers remain fixed in the table that shows you the information. You can toggle the visibility of things like package contents and hidden files as well. And you can also define whether the date modified, size, packed, kind, and attributes are shown. And what packed means is basically the packed size of each item that's within the archive.
Yeah, sounds very flexible. And it's free, too.
Yeah, it's totally free. And as far as Quick Look plugins go, this is probably the best one out there as far as I can see. The fact that it's free means that, frankly, if you use zip files at all on your Mac, you'd be a complete idiot not to pick it up right now.
Yeah, it really sounds like it. Okay, 5 out of 5 stars for Better Zip Quick Look Generator 1.1. 5 out of 5, another Mac choice. Craig, 3 great products this month, and 2 of those products, in-depth reviews, and even a how-to on one of them. Mac format's really keeping you busy.
Yeah, I mean, it's down to the shareware authors, though, mostly. There's some really, really great shareware coming out these days. And it certainly seems that, you know, the days have long gone where shareware was seen as being this sort of bitty products which kind of crashed your computer or made your Mac explode. These days, they're really, really gunning for the pros out there. And, you know, the likes of Adobe and Apple can't be complacent. They've got to keep looking over their shoulder at these products.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. These 3 products are fine examples of what you're talking about. All right, Craig, thanks so much. We will see you again in 2 shows in about a month. Thanks again.
Okay, see you next month.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware for Mac Format Magazine. Segment 4 on our show is always questions and answers from you, our readers. And Trevor Middleton rejoins us to answer those questions. Hello again, Trevor.
Hey there, Brad. How are you doing?
Very good. Trevor will do his best to answer your questions, and you can send him your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And as we always say, please remember to tell us where you're from, and very important, how to pronounce your name. Our first question is from John Biscobi of Eastwood, Nottinghamshire. That's the birthplace of D.H. Lawrence for all you literary types. John wrote us, "The back and forth arrows have disappeared from my Safari windows. Now if I want to go back to the previous window, I have to close the window with the red button and start all over again. I can't find how to get the arrows back in either Help or the Tiger manual. Can you assist me?" Trevor.
Indeed I can, John. Yes, it sounds to me like you've inadvertently right-clicked the forward and back arrows in the Safari toolbar and removed them. Fortunately, there is a simple way to restore them. Simply go to the View menu and choose Customize Toolbar, and you'll see a sheet pop down with various buttons, tools, search boxes, and so forth that you can drag onto the toolbar in order to customize it. All you have to do then is drag the forward and back arrows from the sheet onto the toolbar, click Done, and you're sorted. Brad.
Very simple answer there. All right, question 2 is from Paul Reed in Granada, Spain. He writes us, "Perhaps you can help me with a syncing problem I'm having with my new third-generation iPod Nano 4GB model. Everything seems to sync perfectly except for the calendar and to-do lists. I can manually export my iCal calendars and copy them into the calendar folder on the iPod, but this rather defeats the point of having bought an MP3 player that claims to automatically sync these items. I've tried resetting the iPod several times, updating the software, lastly scouring the Apple discussion groups for help, but apart from finding a couple of other similar cases like mine, there's been no suggestions from anything I have not already tried. Any ideas?"
Well, Paul, I actually do have a third generation iPod Nano myself, and I've noticed one or two glitches with iCal syncing. Like you, I checked a few forums, and yes, people do seem to be having problems, and it does seem to be, or to have been, a bug with the software. However, I have to say that since installing the latest iPod update, the one that was issued at the end of January, the problem does seem to have cured itself. Fingers crossed. I'm keeping an eye on this one. Let me know if you managed to cure the problem with the latest iPod update. I know you emailed me just before we did this recording and said you're still having problems. So do let me know if the update fixes things for you. And we'll keep an eye on that one and maybe keep you posted some other time. But thanks for the question, Paul. Back to you, Brad.
All right, and finally, question three is from Lon Potgieter in Cape Town, South Africa, who writes us, I have two problems for which I need some help. I switched from Windows about 2 years ago, and I've never been able to find a decent file manager to replace my Norton file manager, which allowed a side-by-side view of two directories with their respective files. Are you able to propose a comparable way of keeping two directories in sync with one another, especially with large volumes of files? And secondly, I have approximately 10 gigabytes of research files. These can be PDFs, XLS, docs, text, or HTML files. Are you able to suggest a means to keep these in a data store, which can be replicated or synchronized between my MacBook Pro and my iMac in such a way that I do not lose important research? Almost like a personal document management system here, Trevor.
Yeah, well, Lon, I'm a great fan of a couple of applications that will do exactly what you want. In fact, that's exactly what I use them for, synchronization of directories and hard disks. First of all, there's Carbon Copy Cloner, which is freeware, and that will make scheduled incremental backups of any folders or entire disks if you want. Secondly, there's SuperDuper, which will do exactly the same thing, though if you want to make scheduled backups, you'll have to pay a shareware fee. So give Carbon Copy Cloner a try first. Do a Google search for that particular item. Download it, give it a try, and see if that works for you. If you want any more help, do feel free to get back to us on the usual email address. Brad.
Some good questions this time around, Trevor. Thanks so much for helping us.
No problem at all. See you next time.
And you can email Trevor at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And please remember to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Chris Finn, Gary Marshall, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakularopoulou. Join us again for our next edition on Monday, the 3rd of March. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.